This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Xiaoning. Now, let's turn our attention this morning to the issue of income inequality and the latest findings coming out of the Khazanah Research Institute. So a working paper recently published by KRI highlights the potential flaws in Malaysia's policy to address income inequality, particularly with regards to targets on labour income share.
Now, under the Shared Prosperity Vision 2030, the government has made increasing labour income share one of its benchmarks to tackle inequality. Specifically, one of the key indicators in the SPV is to increase compensation of employees from 35% to 48% of GDP. However, KRI believes that this focus could be actually problematic.
So in order to get a better understanding of the research, we have on the line with us this morning Christopher Chung, Deputy Director of Research at the Khazanah Research Institute. Thank you for joining us, Christopher. So help us understand here, what is labour income share and how does this factor into our current policies to combat income inequality?
So when we talk about labour income share, or at least how it is officially measured, we are talking about income that is paid to what we call the factors of production. Or you can think of it in terms of the ingredients that go into what we use to produce goods and services. And in this case, it would be labour, workers, or capital, things like your equipment, machineries, or buildings. And so this concept of factor income is slightly different from the concept of household income, which is what we normally use to calculate income inequality using what is known as the Gini coefficient. So when we refer to the labor income share, we are actually referring to the share of income that goes to labor or workers in the form of wages, and also to self-employed workers in the form of self-employed income. So, and I think the intuition behind this is that when the share of labour income increases relative to the income that goes to capital, this actually reduces inequality of factor incomes. That means inequality between your labour and capital. And this reduction of inequality is also consistent with the reduction of household income inequality through the Gini coefficient as your indicator.
And Chris, could you briefly explain what Gini coefficient means for those who may be unfamiliar with this term then?
Well, the Gini coefficient basically is a measure that takes into consideration the entire distribution of income for a particular country. And it ranges from 0 to 1. 0 means that it is a perfectly equal society, and 1 means that it is perfectly unequal. So I think Malaysia is at about 0.399, if I remember correctly. That means it's moderately unequal, given international rankings and all that.
So based on what you've just explained, the theory is that when labour income share goes up, the Gini coefficient will come down. Is that correct?
Well, I think in the official policy formulation, they didn't quite formulate it with the kind of direct links to say that when you increase the labour income share, the Gini coefficient will reduce. But what they have done is that they have set a labour income share target, and they also have set a Gini coefficient target. That means you have set one target that is looking at what we call factor income. That means your labour income share. And the other one is essentially a household income inequality indicator, which is your Gini coefficient. So the assumption underlying it is that these two set of indicators are actually consistent with one another, that when you increase one, the other will decrease. But of course, they didn't draw the kind of direct links between the two indicators.
And your research shows that there may be some problems with focusing on labour income share. Now, why is this problematic?
There are essentially two criticisms that we are making in the paper. The first one is that the increase in the labour income share may not necessarily be associated with higher wages for workers, because the share of labour income can increase simply because we have actually more workers that are doing low-wage work in low productivity economic sectors. In fact, another study that we have cited in our paper has actually shown that the increase in our labour income share could be driven by the underlying trend of deindustrialization. That means our industries have not technologically progress to a mature level before we have moved to services as our engine of growth. So that means this is actually not a healthy indicator for the economy. And the second criticism is that the labor income share itself is not actually a good indicator of household income inequality. Instead, I think we have argued in our paper that the more important element here to consider is what we call labor income dispersion, or very loosely used, you can also think about it in terms of labor income inequality or wage inequality. And it's actually quite intuitive if you think about it, because if you increase the share of labor income, and if we assume labor income is highly unequal, then of course the overall income inequality will increase. But if you, and it is the reverse, so if we increase the share of labor income, but labor income is highly equal, then overall income inequality will decrease. So we are actually trying to draw attention to this policy variable, which to us is currently missing from the policy narrative.
And when it comes to your research, you know, what are the limitations that you are facing in conducting this research, and how are you looking to build upon your findings?
So let me just say that this is a working paper that is part of our ongoing research, which we are actually putting it out there to, in fact, generate some feedback, public discourse and discussion. A lot of our limitations, of course, revolve around the fact that we actually do not have micro data for the research. So the data that we use are actually publicly available ones, which in a way limit some of the ways we construct the variables and indicators for some of the more technical parts of our research, which requires some assumptions and estimation on our part. So we certainly hope to update this analysis when the Household Income Expenditure Survey 2019 is released later this year, which I think will give us more data points for us to verify the results given some of these data limitations.
So in your view and based on your research, what kind of questions should we be asking when it comes to the issue of income inequality then?
For me, I think it is very important to understand how income inequality is related with the structure of our economy. That is, how is income that is derived from production activities in different economic sectors or subsectors is distributed amongst the factors of production, your labor and capital, and how then this is eventually transmitted to households in terms of wages or, you know, dividends or whatnot. So in a way, I think the focus of the Shared Prosperity Vision 2030, where they sort of draw attention to this labor income share and income inequality, is quite fascinating to us, because I think it opens up a new areas of research and draws attention to household issues within production income. But we think that the question of labor income inequality or dispersion is currently missing from the discourse, and we think that this could be actually more crucial for Malaysia moving forward.
Thank you very much for joining us this morning, Chris. And that was Christopher Chung, Deputy Director of Research at the Khazanah Research Institute. Now, the working paper that KRI has put out is quite technical, but it is important to understand to try and understand what it is they're getting at, because this is the kind of data that our economic policies is premised on. This is the kind of data that will dictate how the government addresses or views problems that need to be addressed. So the point that Christopher was making was that in all of this discussion about shared prosperity, they see income inequality as being absent from the discussion, which is a problem, considering that if you are talking about increasing the income share, which is the labor income share, which is basically the contribution of incomes to the GDP of the country, you could increase your labor income share by increasing the number of low wage workers. That would increase your labor income share, but it wouldn't be moving you towards a more equal society. It wouldn't
or
be
higher
moving,
paying jobs.
Yes, and it wouldn't be moving you towards a more developed society.
Yeah, in fact, this focus could actually mean that, basically there's just a greater number of low-skilled workers. And in turn, it could be because of this deindustrialization in Malaysia, which isn't a healthy trend, because mm-hmm. we're supposed to move towards more industrialization, right? All this automated IoT, Internet of Things, that's supposed to be happening, this IR 4.0, right? And ideally, with the move towards IR 4.0, it should come with higher paying jobs for everybody, not just jobs.
Mm-hmm. So this is the difficulty, right? So the process of deindustrialization is one that is reasonably common. You know, it's a natural progression. But what's the problem here in Malaysia is that we could be seeing deindustrialization before we are ready and before we are supposed to. So that's why you see people like Khazanah and people like Professor Jomo Kwame Sundaram, whom you spoke to on the Breakfast Grill recently, Shaoning, talking about premature deindustrialization and the potential impacts that this could have on the Malaysian society. And we are also running a poll on this subject on the BFM Twitter account, that's at BFM Radio, asking you, should the government prioritise technological upgrading that comes with higher income inequality or a more equitable society that is stuck in the middle income trap? And this in response to this question, we've had about 60 votes so far, and nearly 70% have said the government should prioritise moving towards a more equitable society. In other words, shrinking the gap between the rich and the poor, rather than focusing on technology.
Yeah, because you don't want to have anyone left behind, right? I mean, if we look at some of the examples, and I'm not saying in any way that Malaysia is close to it, but the cases of like Hong Kong and Chile, right, where there's been civil unrest, a lot of it derives itself because of the huge income inequality, mm-hmm. and the sense that people are being left behind in this progression where, you know, you can see the economy doing well, but I'm somehow not the one benefiting in any way. I can't get a job, I can't get housing, and, you know, people get unhappy, the youth especially, and, mm-hmm. and then they kind of move onto the streets because they feel that no one's hearing them.
Yes, because it leads to a sense of disenfranchisement, and that can breed a long-term discontent as well. So right now, though, we are about to head into the 8 o'clock news, but don't go anywhere because after that, we'll be having the Breakfast Grill, where I'll be speaking with Benjamin Vusho, President of Asia at Sephora. So be sure to stay tuned for that after the 8 o'clock news, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.